My name is Rudy Edmond.
And mine is Doris Edmond.
And the title of our 1 hour together here is Creative Retirement. And we want to share ideas during the course of this hour on what one might do in terms of retirement that might be considered creative. And our main interest and concern really is built around a program that we conduct back in Thousand Oaks. And that is, we both provide work sessions for people who are planning for retirement. Now that planning can start at any age. And we try to get people involved as young as, 25, 35, particularly 35, 40-ish. And because that's a time when you've got time to do some things that you really are planning to do and get them done. So it's a good idea to get started early, and there's no time that's too late. So the present is the time to be thinking about the future. And so we're dealing there with a sequence of courses, each 2 hours, and we run at least seven of these. So we have 7 2-hour sessions, usually one a week. And it's in connection with the SMART program, which is the AAL, the Aid Association for Lutherans program, which they fund and make available at no cost, so that they provide training to us and they provide materials to people who engage in these conferences or sessions, and no cost to them.
We've been told that we are some of the best recruiters for trainers here at Holden, because people come here from all over the country, and we tell them that trainers are needed and to write to AAL if they'd like to be trainers, and we've gotten some remarkable results, I understand. So maybe some of you would like to be thinking about that.
So you might just think about it as we're talking here, and then if you want to ask us further questions about it, we'd be glad to respond to that too. But we tried to center these sessions around attitudes that relate to retirement. How do you feel about retirement? You know, that's very basic. If you're unhappy about the fact that you're retired, or you're being retired, or you're really dreading the day that retirement comes, that's one thing. If it looks good to you, and you're just waiting for the opportunity, and you're waiting for all of that time to do the things you've always wanted to do, that's a very different kind of attitude. So what we want to do is think about the things that really condition our attitude in regard to retirement. And that's really where we're going to zero in. Now, we're not in any sense going to try to give you the substance of all of these sessions that we talk about, you see, as 2 hours each. We have 1 hour or less together this afternoon to think about all of the subjects that we deal with in those sessions. But first of all, the first session, and always the starting point, is attitude. How do you feel about retirement? And what we really want to do this afternoon is to share attitudes and share ideas with one another. And so that's the purpose of our getting together. And what we want to do is to have you chime in at any point that you feel that you would like to say something about these things, because many of you are in retirement. Others of you are thinking about it, and let us have your ideas as we go along. We show a film to kick this off, which we can't do here today, but it deals with how people feel about retirement. And there's, in the film, there's an old man, 84 years old, who is in retirement, has been retired for some time, and he expresses himself as a person who feels good about retirement. He's still active And he hasn't quit his activity. Even though he's 84 years old, he's been retired, but he still goes to the office. He was a personnel manager in a corporation, and even though he doesn't have to be there, nobody expects him, he still keeps an office and he goes there every morning. And he's not going to let loose, you see. He's active and he's going to continue on. Well, that's one way of doing it. Another person in the film, the lady, do you want to describe her?
Oh, yeah. Well, she is a full-time volunteer. She just exuberates her excitement over the things that she's doing. She works for the church, she goes to the hospital, and she just loves the idea of being retired. She had worked hard all her life at a job, and now she's doing the very things that she has always wanted to do without any pressure. There's something about being able to do it because you want to and not just because you have to do it for the money.
Then there's another older man in the film. He says, I am sick and tired of the rat race. I have worked all my years. I'm now in retirement. And I am detached. I want to relax, and I don't have any schedule. You know, I do what I want to. I get up when I want to get up. I have nothing special in mind on ahead, you know. So I'm just relaxed and enjoying retirement. And that's his approach to it.
I think he had a lot of hobbies, though, because he mentioned the fact that he did a lot of writing and I imagine he probably plays golf and does some things like that.
Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting to hear from some of you. Do you want to share how you feel about your retirement? Those of you who are retired, do you have anything you'd like to share? This is open. You don't have to say a word. If you want to participate, we'd welcome any ideas you might want to come up with.
Why don't you share first?
What do I do? Okay, I'm retired. I've retired several times. I retired first, I guess, from an oil company. I worked as a geologist, a professional geologist, and then as a manager. And I retired from that, really, back in 1960. And I changed careers from that, went to Augustana College, Rock Island, Illinois, and I became a teacher full time. And so that was a whole shift.
Except for our summers. You got your summers off.
Okay. Right.
That's when we came up here.
But that was a change, a major change, and that was the first retirement. Then I went from that to the deanship of California Lutheran College, took on another job which was different from teaching, and served as dean for 5 years at California Lutheran College, and then I retired from that. And then I went to the classroom, and so I became a full-time teacher for a number of years again. And then in 1980, when I reached 70, I decided that it was time for me to get out and let somebody else take my spot on the faculty, and so I retired. But I live a block and a half from the campus, and I now volunteer my time, and I'm still teaching one course a semester. So I'm retired. I have the best title in the college. I'm Professor Emeritus, you know, and I work for $1 a year. I make them give me a contract because then they can fire me. If the students don't like my teaching, then the dean has grounds to say, well, we will not continue your contract. So that's the way it stands at the present time. The dean has been very gracious, and he's going to let me teach another course this fall. So I'll be teaching September through the first semester, and then again, probably, if my health holds and I feel good about it, why, I'll continue to teach probably the second semester. So that's my kind of retirement.
Well, I've been teaching on and off and on all my adult life before I was married, and then we had children, and I took about 6 years off from teaching. But once you're a teacher, you just kind of restless until you get back into it. And Rudy has been kind enough to say, you know, do what you want to do. If you want to teach, teach. If you don't want to teach, don't teach. So I just happen to like to teach. So I would, I started out as a substitute and soon became full-time. Then each time we move, I'll take a year off to get settled, and we moved from Rock Island to Oklahoma City and then back again. And I went back to school and studied in the graduate school at Oklahoma City University. And eventually we opened a new a mission. We started a mission in our end of town. It was the ELC. And we built a church to include a preschool. So since the person we hired moved to Hawaii, I took over the preschool. And I did that for 2 years. Then we moved to Rock Island, and they asked me to start a lab school. So I started a lab school, and I trained teachers. Then I did that for about 6.5 years. Then we moved to California. Each time he changes, I have to change my direction, but it's kind of fun to think of where I can best use my talents. And then I decided to do some publishing. I published a series of Let's Begin idea files for Creative Teaching Press. Did that a few years, and then they asked me to teach graduate school in early childhood education, curriculum, and research at California Lutheran College. I did that for 4 years and felt I ought to retire too. So after that, I volunteered as a worker for child abuse and neglect in Ventura County. And I go into the schools and talk to children about how they can prevent. They call it child advocacy. I talk to the children about how they can prevent abuse, do what they can to prevent abuse. And I'm doing that now. And then, of course, every summer we've come up here and volunteered our time here. So we feel like we've had the best of both worlds, and we're still healthy and still going strong, so we're very thankful.
Yes?
I've been retired about 5 years, not being terrific.
Good.
I hit the ball for about 40 years at paint company. I was a paint chemist, and ended up buying the company with a group of fellows. And the only thing I felt was hard to leave, but I did retain and become part of the board of directors for the company. Mm-hmm. And we run the company. That helps a lot. But I find that I don't have as much time as I figured out.
That's the general consensus.
There's things I can do what I was doing when I was working that I can't do now.
Yeah.
But I have spread my wings, as it were. And I got into other things like carving. I didn't know I had any talent in carving, but it turned out beautiful.
Right.
And
is that wood carving?
Wood carving.
Uh-huh.
So then I figured, well, I was retiring. How about my wife? And I told her, I said, just continue. Just the way you go. Don't let me cramp your style. So before I retired, I built a shop right close to our house. We have about 3.5 acres. We moved out of Seattle, and we moved close to a lake. And I love trees, and we have beautiful trees through there, and I replanted the area and so forth. And we are very active in our church, which is a community church. When we moved out from Seattle, it was very primitive out there, and we didn't have a Lutheran church there, so we went to a community church, which worked out real fine. The families there are like our own families, and we worked very hard to get this church working and functioning in the community.
Mm-hmm.
It's a growing community, and when we went out there in 1960 from Seattle, I was going back and forth to work by that time, which was 25 miles, but it was enjoyable miles going out to the country every night. The area was very primitive, as I said. But now it's growing up to the point I almost feel like going 25 miles more further away because it's grown up. But we have to live with that. That's what we call progress.
Yes.
I think retirement is terrific. But I don't think you should sit down and watch the tube unless that's really important to you. But find some other activities that keep expanding your mind. And I read a lot and keep up with politics and all the other things that go with it, which is not very bright these days. And but to maintain some connection with the rest of the world, don't withdraw yourself.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good advice. Any other comment? Anyone else would like to share?
Yeah. I've been retired for about 75 years.
Uh-huh.
I've enjoyed it.
You've enjoyed it.
Try to be active. Focus on the nesting, travel, my kids.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's good.
Most colleges now have free courses that senior citizens can take. I think that's wonderful if you are near a community college or a four-year college or a university. That's one way to make new friends as well as to learn new things. We have just moved to a retirement village near the school, as Rudy said, about a block and a half from the school. And a lot of the people there, they're all retired, but they are enrolling now at CLC for courses for this fall. And this summer there's an elder hostel going on the campus. And many of them were going to that. That's there'll be three separate weeks. How many of you have ever been to an elder hostel?
Any? Do you know what it is?
No.
Would you like to know?
Yes.
Elder hostel is an idea conceived that's now international in scope, and it mainly started from the fact that colleges during the summer had vacant dormitories. And they could—they also had faculty who could very well be engaged in teaching and needed the teaching, even though they didn't teach in summer school. But they could teach for 1 week, and the people who would take this is open to senior people who are 60, 62, I think, and up. And what you do is you go to the school, you move into the dormitory, you're fed at the college cafeteria or commons, you know, wherever the eating place is, and there is a fee that is set nationwide, and I believe it's $180 now for a week, and that includes your board and your room. And it also includes the fee for the course that you take. So you take a course. You're there for normally 3 weeks. And during that 3 weeks' time, you can take as many as three courses during the 3 weeks. And your total cost is taken care of in the $180 a week. And you can go from one school to the next. You see, these are scheduled all summer long during the season from, say, June, July, and August. And you now can even sign up and go to schools in England or other places in Europe. So it's something that you should know is available, and some people really spend their summers, you see, just traveling from one place to another, meeting new people, new friends. You have the best of all worlds because you go to school, no examinations, you know, no tests to prepare for, but you, you know, you spend time with a person who has a subject that is something that very much interests the teacher, otherwise they wouldn't teach it. And they offer these courses, you see, and many of them take advantage of the local, something that's unique to the local community where the college is. And so to find out about this, go to any college or any school and simply ask for how you get information about Elder Hostel, or go to a library. And they can direct you, and you can write it, you write to, I think it's in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. and they will send you a listing of all the courses that are available all the way across the country and tell you when they're offered, and it's first come, first served, you see, and so they fill up the space.
And they fill up fast, so you really have to, the minute they open up, you need to get your application in.
I think it was last week somebody was here and they had just been to one of these in Hawaii. You know, so, you know, where can you go in Hawaii and stay for $180 a week? You know, board and room. You know, it's this kind of thing. So it's a great opportunity that's available and you learn something. That's it's
how many
stimulating.
Hours did they go a day?
Half a day.
You know, you got the other half to
play around.
Do whatever you want to. It's really a great deal. It's Elder Hostel. Okay.
Is it really true, in your opinion, that when you stop learning, you start dying?
Use it or lose it.
That's a very good way of putting it.
Is it?
You know, really. Our life is really based on being active. You've always been active, you know. And if you really stop being active mentally, you know, then you begin to deteriorate, and physically as well. You know, we all have to admit that at our age, we don't do things as fast, maybe, but we can continue to do things, and you keep going, and you feel better. And
exercise is really the greatest thing for your health. We have a swimming pool at our retirement village, and I can tell the days that I usually go in right away in the morning and have my swim about a quarter of a mile. And on the days that I don't, I certainly feel the difference.
Well, let's get at a little organization to this in a sense. What really shapes attitudes? One of the things that we deal with in our sessions is money. Money is a very important shaper of what you can do and how you feel about what you're doing. When you reach retirement, you really change the whole pattern, because at that point you're no longer earning money from a salary, but you become a money manager. You really become a manager. That's a whole new kind of thing. So you are going to manage the money and the investment that you have accumulated over the years. And the important thing, obviously, is to be thinking about this when you're young, to begin to put aside money that you will have will be available to you to manage. Because when you reach retirement age and you have no salary, then cash flow becomes a very critical kind of thing in your life. If you don't have cash to deal with, you're very limited in things that you might wish to do. So you have to think about your insurance, you have to think about what Social Security will provide, you have to think about the retirement plan in your company, if that's where you've been employed, and how it's all going to fit together into a cash flow that allows you to do the things that you have been planning that you would like to do. So the planning for that really has to start way back. And I think, you know, in my own feeling, that we all ought to be, at every point in life, planning for the next 15 years. Now, if you think about it, keep planning ahead for 15 years. How are you going to manage your money for the next 15 years, your investment? You see, even if you're 95, you know, you ought to still be thinking about the next 15 years. And if we kind of make a pattern of doing this, you see, throughout your life, then you've got a road plan. You wouldn't start out to go from here to Washington, D.C. without a map. You know, this is the kind of a map that you follow. And you're going to plan what you're going to do, and you're mainly going to be managers, you see, from this point on.
But you want to stay flexible.
Yeah. And there are a lot of things we can't control. Inflation, you see, various kinds of things. What do? You got to shift gears. You have to be creative in how you manage your funds and how you manage money generally at the time of retirement. It's not a time to go into things that are high risk. Anybody want to comment on that? You know, a lot of people get taken, you know, at this point. They become vulnerable because money becomes somewhat critical. And somebody comes along and says, well, I can make you a mint, you know, if you just invest your money this way. Well, you know, you've got to really think seriously about that and be a good manager, a good steward of what you have accumulated and make it last, you see. Anybody want to pick up on that? Have you had any experiences, you know, people who have had problems?
My experience might be a little bit different from some others. I have been with this company for 45 years.
Yeah.
Retired at age 65, and we plan to retire at 65.
Mm-hmm.
This business is working on, and nobody's indispensable, and our people below you are waiting before you get out so they can move up and so on.
Right.
So we finally retired at 65. My company was kind of generous, and I still have an office there too, although
mm-hmm.
your girls write letters for me and give me calls and all that sort of thing. Director Emeritus, which is another one of these government affairs. But it's still, but you know, you can't be with the company that long without, you don't just lose interest the next day.
That's right.
So it does something for you to keep in touch with something that you love and like and hopefully know something about. But as far as finances are concerned, you're quite right. We want some income property and some other things. And at age 65, I disposed of all of that. We were retired.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, my wife was going to have cancer about a year after I retired, and she then passed away about less than a year after that. So that changed over the years.
Yep.
But that is one of those things in which you do just that. You change gears. You don't stop.
No.
And I found that it does give you a wider latitude of doing things when you are just doing what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that there are lots of things to do if you don't care what the income is. The Chamber of Commerce, for example, needs people to do just a whole ton of things. And so I found that doing some things for the Chamber of Commerce, in this particular case, the education, gives education.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's necessary. I think the business community and the educational community need to work close together. And of course, the things you can do with the church and so on. An opportunity like this is someplace between exhilarating and great.
Yeah.
And I found that, as you have pointed out, if you start sitting around feeling sorry for yourself or looking for pity or something like that, well, you've had it. And there's plenty of things to do, as you pointed out, in the field of education. I took a course in computer science last winter. I can't say that I would pass with the highest head of class.
Mm-hmm.
But I at least learned some terminology, and I learned about it. And I'll take another one maybe. There's no question but what there are plenty of educational opportunities that a person ought to take advantage of. The tube is addictive, and it's just about like all addictive things are. They are good for you.
Yeah.
But I guess the point of what I was wanting to add was is that you do have to change. You're right. You want to look for 15 years out of 10, anyway, something like that. But you also got to be able to change gears.
I think what some of you may not know is that you are on staff here at Holden Village now.
Oh,
right?
Yes, I'm working very hard.
Yeah. So he's like the younger ones you see around here. We're all doing the same kind of thing. We're on staff.
And now, you have.
Excuse me.
I was going to say you do have time. To spend more time with your grandchildren and communicate with the generations, you might say, after you've retired. And I think this is just wonderful, to be able to have time for your family, which you probably didn't have too much of before. And they appreciate it. I know ours do.
I was going to ask that. You said you belong to live in a retirement community that infers that there are any children around, and I wondered how you felt about that.
Well, we see a lot of children because we're active in our church and we're active on the education committee and the Sunday school and that sort of thing. So we don't lack for seeing children of all ages.
And they're welcome there, you know, to visit.
In the community, we grandparents, you know, we're all grandparents. Most they in the retirement village, and grandchildren come. So we have them around, and then I'm just, you know, I'm over at the college, and there I'm right in the midst of the college environment, and so on.
And the college students work over at our village. They serve our meals, and so we have lots of young people around.
And that's important. You know, I don't think we want to lose that contact. We certainly don't, and I'm sure you don't. Now, you had your hand up a little bit ago.
I had a point to make, is that I think this age group, and I'm talking my age group, we were fortunate in one respect, that we were brought up in a period that was real tough.
Right.
And we learned the value of a dollar. And if we can indoctrinate this into our young sons and daughters, at the time that they can do something about it, I think we'd be doing them a service, because some of the attitudes are pretty flamboyant on some of these young people. They said, well, let's just get rid of the day because we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Well, that might be all right in some respect, but I think you still got to think about a 15-year period. I think more a 25-year period, really. But you got to be more flexible as time goes along, because these time periods are changing faster than we ever thought. Because inflation has something to do with it. How that changed so quickly in a matter of 8-10 years. So it's got to be changed all the time. But I think we are fortunate in one respect. We didn't have very much to start with.
Right.
So whatever we dug out, boy, we kept it and hung on to it and nurtured it and did what we had to do to make it further our own lives. That's what we got to indicate in the young people, that there is a tomorrow.
Yes, that's, I think, very important. There is a future, and we have to believe that. We have to have faith in it.
When we were in college, I know there were young people who were getting married, and they said, oh, well, we're not going to have any children. Because not in a world like this. You know, that was 50 years ago. And we hear that again.
Yes.
And I suppose they've been saying that all the way along. But we think, gee whiz, I'm glad we didn't have that philosophy when we were that age.
Yes.
Could I ask, like to pursue that a little further on just what ideas you might have of how to get that kind of attitude, how to teach or inculcate those attitudes that now, I suppose maybe now with the unemployment and the harder things, maybe they'll have to learn the hard way like some of us did, but other than that, is there
another suggestion?
Well, are you addressing to me?
Well, anyone? Yes, whoever would like to come.
You know, I guess I live in the old school that the parents should be a shining example for the kids, mm-hmm. something for them to look up to, and if they see what you're doing, and I am tickled to death to say my three sons, that sounds like a story, but They follow their mother and father's attitudes towards living, the way they raise their kids and so forth. We couldn't be more pleased. And they're religious kids, and they work hard, they're industrious, they are loyal to their companies, which I think is invaluable. I mean, these things, if you give that to your children, you have given them a lot. And it's got to be done all the time, but you can't play one game and then tell them something else. That is not the way to do it.
You have to nurture that respect. And
all the way through.
All the way through. And if they respect you, they'll follow you.
Had a hand over here. Do you want to comment on this?
I wanted to bring up another point.
Okay, well, let's follow this one then.
Well, I was just going to add this thought that I agree with the gentleman just said about your sons. You talked to them, but when you got son-in-laws, you have to tread a little more carefully.
You got daughter-in-laws, too, you know.
Yeah.
But wife and I, when she was living, we talked about it because we got a son-in-law, one particular son-in-law, that prides himself. In fact, he's going to be $1 million in debt by the time he's 30.
Oh, jeez.
Well, there is a philosophy, you know, that the way to make money is to borrow money.
Uh-huh.
Well, that isn't going so well right now. And so I guess the bottom line is, they're going to have to learn the way my dad learned, was to go broke once on easy borrowed money. My dad went through the period which he could borrow money on the signature and did, and things fell off, and so he had to start over again, but he did. And I guess maybe some of them have to learn that way, because one of the things my wife and I always agree with, her father and mother didn't tell us what to do, and my father and mother didn't tell her what to do. We decided we were going to leave hands off. They may have to learn the hard way. They'll remember it longer.
But I think the point that we can be good models is really very important. And that is, I think, an obligation we have.
But we also can't meddle too deep.
You can't run their life.
No
doubt about that. Okay. Anybody else have a different point of view here?
I just wanted to ask you if I think it's harder for a woman to switch gears or a man.
Harder for a woman or a man? I guess I can only comment from one side. But
you mean harder to retire?
Be flexible?
Flexible.
Creative? Change?
It all depends on your attitude toward yourself, your feeling of self-worth, and your feeling of, well, I think I can do it. At least I'll take a chance and try something new. And that's an individual thing.
I think at our age, you know, we can try some new things. What if we fail? You know, what if your wood carving didn't turn out? You could do something else. You know, take up something and give it a try. And at this age, that's being creative. You know, try to make something happen. Try to make it happen. If it doesn't, shoot. Switch to something else, try that.
You can go back to something that you used to do that you've let go. I started taking voice lessons a few months ago, and I hadn't been singing in the choir or anything for years.
Here's your chance, Gwen. You could go into voice lessons.
Yeah.
I am thoroughly enjoying enjoying it, even though nobody else will enjoy it, maybe, but I am enjoying it, and I think that's the thing that's important.
Well, I think, you know, since I retired, I lost my husband, however, before he retired, but I knew all my life I wanted to be a clown. And I decided at age 65, this is it.
Great.
Good. So I'm having a ball with it, and I'm doing a lot in the Christian schools with youngsters at the, you know, preschools and things. And at first I thought, oh, it's kind of silly, my age, and then I really am having a ball with it.
Silly things are good.
Yeah, I guess.
We need to be silly at our age.
Yeah.
We can get by with being silly.
Who cares?
He has it.
Yeah, you had a point, now you want to make.
Okay, I wanted to ask the question. I have about 7 years to go for retirement.
Yeah.
Would anyone care to address the question, what do you think about retiring at 62 or 65, or one of those two? Would there be any advantage one to another if you're healthy and reasonably good health and so forth and so on? Is there anyone here who has done that? Do you find decreased Social Security at 62 is a problem, or?
It comes out of the same.
Or what?
It really, in the long run, comes out the same.
Statistically. Yeah.
Yeah.
Comment.
I retired when I was 62, and I'm, besides being a chemist, I was also very interested in accounting and so forth, and I knew how figures worked, and I came to the conclusion that there's quite a few fellows who retire at 65 and they only last a couple more years, and I figured I wasn't going to do that because you don't know what your own system is. One day you might just drop off, you don't know. So I figured, well, I figured all our finances and everything was in good shape. I didn't want to have $1 million, but we were financially okay, and if something happened to me, why, my wife was taken care of. So I figured those 3 years would be the most valuable 3 years I ever had, and I never regretted it. And I've even convinced other people to do the same thing. They said, well, we lose on Social Security. I said, okay, let's figure it out.
I'd like to say, too, that we cared for my mother for many years. Mm-hmm. And then we brought his father from Sweden, and we cared for him 8 years. And now within a year of each parent, they're both gone. And so our kids were all raised, and so we're footloose now to travel and do what we want, and we're really and truly enjoying it.
Great.
I agree with him. I think first you retire 62 if you can find it. I mean, Social Security, it ain't that much different.
I only have one regret, and that is that as you in the chemistry field, if you you get so much into your head that you can't transfer to your son. Luckily, one of my sons followed their dad and is in the chemical end of it, but it's hard for me to transpose all I know to him, and that is something I regret. How could I do that? Because you cannot tell somebody continuously what's in your head and how it arrived in your head and how to tell them about it, how to make it valuable for them. Now, that's the only regret I have, really, that it's almost like it's thrown away in a sense.
Right.
Okay, is that answer
sounds good.
Part?
Very good.
At least you got.
I'll add.
Yeah.
That.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Well, we'll hear you first, okay. and then.
I retired at 62 from warehousing. Now we lead a different life than much of you people do. She likes to shoot, and I like to shoot. We go out and shoot sometimes on our way down to the beach.
Uh-huh.
We got a motorcycle. We like to just hop onto it and just take off if we want to. We don't have to take any pills to go to sleep or any pills for our arthritis or everything else. The boob tube can stay off for days at a time, and we always find something to do. We go to bed and you just fall asleep. You get up in the morning and you just go off and just no problems or worries. You just live from day to day and
take a few risks.
I did that until our children say, Mom, Dad, help. I don't know how to do this. So he's committed for a week or two.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing, too.
That's
just
right.
A technical point here. How old were you when you got your first motorcycle?
I bought it to go to work, and I bought it about 2 years before I retired. And then after I retired, it only took me a gallon of gas to go for a week, but it took me 5 gallons for my pickup to go back and forth to work.
Yeah.
So then we bought a big Goldwing, and I'm putting a trailer together now.
That's a goal.
And when we get back, we go back together, go behind the motorcycle, and you just take off. Break 2 miles to the gallon. There's so many Goldwings out there, and you're it's just a happy bunch.
Goldwing is a club?
Goldwing is the big Honda motorcycle.
Oh.
They're having their convention in Lewiston.
on the 8th, 9th, 10th,
and you just come there, they roll out the carpet, and everybody has a good time.
I'd say that's real creative.
I had a hand over here.
I guess I wanted to hear from people who have, in retirement, pulled up stakes and moved to a totally new section of the country or a new community.
All right, yeah. Is it a good plan to move when you reach retirement?
No. Because you move into something, you don't know where it is, or where you left, or where you can find it.
And then you lose all your friends.
The cupboard isn't there.
If you want to really try this out, the best thing to do is to not burn your bridges behind you. If you have a home and you think you'd like to live in the other part of the United States, rent your home, go rent there's one at the other end, but leave it open so you can come back. You know, don't cut it off so that you're committed. Many people have come to California, you know, and they really didn't like it once they got there. You know, and it's very difficult to go back if you have sold your home, you know, and you've just cleaned out and moved lock, stock, and barrel. Be very cautious. Yeah.
Is there anyone who has possibly moved from one part of the country to the other to be near their family, their children?
Yeah. Is that a good idea to follow your children?
No.
They move.
Away from
ours. Ours is winding up sort of in California. So
they followed us. That's fine.
That's all right. You know, but there's two ways of looking at that. You know, each situation is different.
Ours all live close to where we are. We're real thankful. I mean,
yeah.
Yes. We got grandkids, great grandkids.
Yeah, we enjoy ours close.
We moved way off someplace else.
Mm-hmm. Well, did we answer? At least in part.
It's what I've always thought, but it's just not.
Yeah, right. Okay.
I'd like to offer a suggestion to people. I found that our kids, and for me to move close to one of them would be to be ambidextrous. One less. St. Louis, one in Washington, D.C., and one in Chicago.
Yeah.
But one of the things I found out as a kid got older is they kind of got interested in their ancestry.
Oh, yes.
And so I am in the process, which will be an endless process, of developing a history of my family going back to my great-grandparents. I can go that far without going across. Then I got to go across the water, and that gets a little tedious. But I have the pictures together that saved and that my parents had and so forth to make a pictorial book of some kind or another. I think I got the pictures all straightened out yet as to who's who and what's what. But they suddenly developed an interest in that sort of thing, and so I found that's quite interesting and maybe of some value to somebody.
Yeah. We've been doing the same thing exactly this last winter.
Children are very much interested in their roots these days, and I think that's good. Now, we don't have much time left, and I'd like to kind of wind up in a sense where we wind up with our 7 weeks session, you know. The last major thing that we consider are our blessings. You know, we just stop to think about all the good things that we really have going for us at this point in life. And, you know, what are important blessings? What comes to your mind?
Friends.
What's a blessing you
friends.
Have?
Friends.
Friends.
Health.
Health.
Family.
What's another one?
Family.
What else?
Friends.
Money. What's another blessing?
Your faith.
Your faith.
Insurance.
Your church.
Good
you know. And all of this, and really, what you're really striving for is a whole life. You know, to be healthy is to really be spiritually healthy, to be physically healthy. and
mentally healthy.
Mentally healthy, keep stimulated, you see, and that sort of thing. These are great blessings that we have as we now are in the present and we look 15 years down the road. Well, an exercise that I do with people in our sessions is that I have them put down four, you know, take four slips of paper and put on a blessing on each one that you really cherish. And then after they've done that, well, I have them hold them up, close their eyes, and drop one card. You know, you've lost a blessing. We don't maybe stop to think that some of these blessings are very temporal kinds of things. You can lose your friends. You can lose your money. You can lose many things. But as long as you're alive and going, you have to be creative about how you meet that loss. You know, we can lose a blessing, but we have other blessings that we can pick up on. You know, and so you really don't come to a point of no hope, but you come to a point where you realize that you may lose certain things. You may not, your physical health may not allow you to come to Holden Village. You know, that kind of thing. But you can pick up on other things, you see, and so you don't lose hope, you don't lose faith, you keep planning ahead and you keep thinking about what you would do next if. Now, any comment about that? It's a kind of philosophy, and it is a way of kind of shaping up your attitudes, you know. And it's a way of not letting yourself get down to the point that you're defeated, you know. And that's really important. Yeah, and in conclusion, maybe, unless, is there anybody that wants to make a final statement here as to that for all of us? Otherwise, I thought what we might do is to just distribute the brochure that we have on the place where we live. You know, that's not for everybody to live in a retirement community. We are there simply because we're right next to the college, we're next to our church, we're in a good location where we're very free, and when we want to travel, we can simply close the door and be gone for 2 months, and it's no problem. You know, that is a problem when you own a property, and we had a nice home that we just got rid of that and made ourselves free, you see, in this sense. So this is just another way of treating what worked out for us very well. Any further comment anyone would like to make? Yes.
I would just like to say thank you personally to Mr. and Mrs. Edmund here. After listening to a very stirring mind tour yesterday and this afternoon, you are certainly the Lord's gift to Holden.
Thank you. We appreciate your time.